T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
Welcome to Overnight America with Ryan Recker on KMOX. Sponsored by Michaels Flooring, the flooring experts. MichaelsFlooringOutlet.com.
Yeah.
Waited way too many days for this one. I know it's technically the same amount of days, but it doesn't feel it. It never feels it. Ever, ever, ever feels it. Welcome back to Overnight America. One last hour live tonight here on KMOX. Thanks for anyone that may be sticking around as long as Nancy has from the previous hour. Nancy, how are you?
Hi, I'm fine. I was listening to your callers recount about their experience with Jack Buck, and you mentioned Bob Uecker, and I also was a Jim White fan. I listened to him probably as long as I'm 70, until he retired. And when there would be like a rain delay, I can remember waking my husband up because I'm laughing at Shannon Uecker, and sometimes got Bob Gibson, if my memory, telling their stories and shenanigans that they would pull. I mean, I just found it amusing. And then it made me think back to when I was a little girl, and we had a TV, but during the day, you know, moms weren't watching TV. And she would iron in the bedroom, and she'd have the radio on. And I seem to recall Arthur Godfrey being on KMOX.
Okay.
And Art Linkletter. Have you run across them when you start doing your archive stuff?
Sometimes you can catch them, but I don't have any audio from them that I can readily have available. I might be able to dig a little bit further. Arthur Godfrey, if I remember correctly, was he a syndicated radio show? Maybe I'm mixing it up with someone else, but he would come in and do shows here.
I barely know what syndicated is now.
Yeah, and I think that he was pretty much gone before At Your Service started. Let me double check here. Arthur Godfrey.
I remember hearing At Your Service, that word, you know, because that has gone on all the years I've listened to KMOX.
Right. See, I don't know if he was affiliated with KMOX in that point. Okay, so born, is his daily radio show ended in 1972. Oh, so that would have been after At Your Service. So maybe he contributed, but I don't think that he was on KMOX at the time. But see, I don't know for sure, so I wouldn't be able to talk about that.
All I've been in 55 or 56. I'm 70. I was probably 5 years old or about that.
Well, I guess we'd have to go in the 60s. Someone said that, if I remember reading this correctly, he did a show once here in St. Louis where he talked about the arch being ugly, and it was like a huge topic. Because someone said that, and this is right when it was going up, I think while it was being built, and keep in mind the KMOX studios had that beautiful view right outside and a straight view looking at the arch. So if he would have done a show here and said that, then that would have got a lot of reaction, I'm sure.
Yeah, I would have noticed that, but as a little girl, you know, I remember hearing Arthur Godfrey's voice, and then Art Linkletter, because, you know, we were starting to watch TV then, he was on some show during the day,
Art Linkletter.
Where you would interview children.
Yeah, but I think that the let me double check something real quick. I don't know if Art Linkletter, did he actually have it? Are you thinking of Art Fleming?
No, Art Fleming. I remember all those things. That's, I'm talking back in the 55 to 60, 1955 to 1960 range, because okay. I would have been about 5 years old when.
Yeah, I guess he was doing some things here with KMOX. Yeah, it's amazing the amount of personalities and history this radio station has. And it's weird because I can go through the ebbs and flows where I get really deep into the history of the radio station and learn these things. And then 6 months will pass and I'll forget half of it. It's just the way it goes sometimes. Maybe my memory's not locked tight like it used to be.
It always struck me that, again, KMOX, I'm driving home. This is like in the last 20 years from my work at a grocery store. It's 10:30, and I can't think of his name, but I think his father was a big broadcaster on KMOX, and he had a show for a while. And he had this Chopper One tape that he would play. Carney, maybe?
Yeah,
John
Carney.
I mean, I'm driving home, and I'm by myself, and I'm just glad it was dark because I was just laughing like crazy.
Yeah,
listening to the stuff on the radio. I'm just a big radio person, and
well, that's nice.
KMOX has been there, and I just hope they fill Rush's spot with something good.
Well, thank you, Nancy. Good to hear from you today. Isn't that great? I know that there's a lot of people that have patronized and listened to KMOX all those years. And have all kinds of great fond memories and go back. See, that's even way before my time. Keep in mind, I moved here not quite 4 years ago. And a lot of the history that I learned from the radio station, being going through archives, reading articles, things like that, I don't have the luxury of being able to live it like so many of you had, which is just a awesome thing to be able to have and say that you were experiencing these things firsthand. What a cool, cool thing. So joining us after the break, this is a guest that we had on earlier, but it was such a great interview. Margaret Coker is the author of a book called The Spy Master of Baghdad, a true story of bravery, family, and patriotism in the battle against ISIS. She was a journalist. She spent a lot of time in Iraq. And because of that, she got to see firsthand the fight against terrorism during, you know, the 2000s and 2010s and her experiences about the spy master and the group of Iraqis that were fighting terrorism in ISIS during that time. Really awesome story. I think you're going to enjoy it. Margaret Coker is joining us right after the break on Overnight America, KMOX.
Listening to KMOX has never been easier.
Siri, play KMOX.
Joining us now is the author of a book called The Spy Master of Baghdad, Margaret Coker. Thank you for coming on to KMOX.
It's a pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
A true story of bravery, family, and patriotism in the battle against ISIS. I love true stories. Tell me your connection to this one. How did you come about writing a book?
Well, I grew up in a military family and spent a whole lot of time in my childhood explaining the places where I've been and seen to my friends and family. And that's kind of the reason why I decided to go into journalism, telling good stories about different places. And I didn't set out to be a war correspondent, just kind of fell into it in part because the 9/11 attacks changed the course of so many of our lives. And my newspaper at the time sent me to the Middle East. So I was in Iraq since 2003, I mean, off and on, but covering mostly the Middle East and terrorism issues since then. And, you know, I've sort of witnessed and written about lots of the arcs of suffering and triumph inside Iraq since that time, and really enjoyed reading lots of the books that have come out, you know, written by our generals, our servicemen and women who served and made it back alive. But there's been a big hole missing, and that big hole in this the history of the war on terror is putting Iraqis central to that narrative. And, you know, there are people there who suit up every day in defense of their nation and have been really close partners with the Americans over the course of the last 15 years. And so when I went back full time as the New York Times bureau chief, I had a chance to tell some of their stories. One of them is the spy master of my book. He's been in charge of an elite spy unit that has been one of the closest U.S. counterterrorism partners in the Middle East since the mid-2000s. And unlike other, you know, established agencies that we all know of, like the Mossad and MI6, you know, the Falcons is the name of this group, they've stayed under the radar. You know, they've worked well because in the world of intelligence and espionage, you have to stay in the shadows. But because they had one of the most amazing clandestine operations in this century, the 21st century, they were able to put one of their men behind enemy lines undercover inside the Islamic State. And so for 17 months, he was able to send really detailed real-time intelligence about the terrorist organization. He was a secret weapon in this war. And the spy master wanted the world to know about this act of bravery and the sacrifice that he and his men made to keep us all safe.
When you see and hear these stories, you can see them firsthand and you talk to the people that were involved. Coming back to now 2021, I think a lot of times we look back at how the United States reacted after 9/11, and now today, a lot of people are regretful what we did in Iraq during that time, the amount of money, the amount of time, how we decided to handle it. And at the same time, you start to tell a story about how the Iraqis were getting together and fighting ISIS on their own, and we had this common goal of trying to defeat terrorism in the region. So with a little bit of looking back at it, do you think our time has been well spent, or do you think that there's a reason to be regretful in how we decided to handle that?
Yeah, it's a very complicated question. I mean, I'm not sure that there is a yes or no answer to that, mm-hmm. because in some cases it was a disaster. I mean, there's just no way around it. You know, we, as Americans, our government lied to us and we went to war, and it's been very costly in terms of American lives and American taxpayer money. But of course, in terms of Iraqis' lives and you know, the course of their future. But instead of going into a polemic about U.S. foreign policy, what I really wanted to do in my book was sort of mark out this history in terms of real life people and how it has affected them. You know, two of my main characters were this undercover officer and his handler, who happens to be his actual brother. And so, you know, learning about their family dynamics and the way in which the whole world basically opened up to them after the Americans invaded and toppled Saddam. You know, they came from the wrong side of the tracks, so, you know, really bad neighborhood, or considered a bad neighborhood in Baghdad, and they were the wrong religious affiliation under Saddam. But when he was gone, they were able to really, you know, pursue their dreams, and their family had lots of opportunities. It doesn't come without cost. You know, and the other character, main character of my book, who is the villain, you know, she's a woman, and she's sort of terrifying in her terrorist skill set. But, you know, on paper, she had everything going for her. And through the arc of the American invasion and then the American withdrawal, she also sort of lost it all, and she went off the deep end into this rabbit hole of online extremism. And instead of being able to make a happy life for herself in the new Iraq, she turned to terrorism. So all of our actions, of course, have consequences abroad. And for so many Iraqis, some would tell you that that they don't, you know, they don't regret that Saddam's gone, but they do still blame the U.S. for years of bloodshed that happened as a result of the invasion.
Mm. The Spy Master of Baghdad is the name of the book, which people can look up from Margaret Coker, joining us here on Overnight America. In the name of this special group of people, the Falcons, is there a special meaning for Falcons in Iraq, or is there a reason for that name that you know of?
Yeah, so, you know, throughout history, Iraqis have been known in the Arab-speaking world as incredible literary talents and incredible readers. And falcons as a bird, you know, out in the deserts and the tribes, falcons are used as birds of prey and hunting. They don't use dogs. They use these amazing birds. And so these birds are known in poetry and, you know, in sort of ancient Arabic stories as, you know, these magnificent, noble creatures that have a prey instinct and are cunning. And so all of these attributes kind of have informed, you know, this elite spy unit in terms of taking this name. And so, you know, I've tried my best to do their stories justice. You know, they have a chance to come out of the shadows and have the world learn about some of their very you know, extraordinary tales of derring do. But, you know, one thing as a journalist that, we have to always be careful of is protecting our sources. And so I've tried to put in as much detail as possible without compromising their safety. You know, many of their agents are still in the field doing still, you know, incredibly brave work. And so the cunning and as they've tracked incredibly dangerous people and helped keep their nation and our nation safe as a result. I hope everyone likes it.
I was wondering, you mentioned sources there. So is gathering sources in a foreign country like that the same as you would here in the United States? Because I think about here, if it's an anonymous source or someone that doesn't want to be identified, you know, you're able to background check, fact check, and try to make sure you can corroborate a little bit. But when you're in a foreign country, it seems like that would be a little bit more difficult. And it also seems like there would be more difficulty with accountability if the source was coming to you with false information.
Well, it takes a lot of moxie to be able to fact check, that's for sure. And that's why it took me so long to research this book. You know, of course, soldiers and spies, just like fishermen, they like to tell tall tales. And so to make sure that you're able to corroborate the information was very important to me. I have deep sympathy and admiration for these individuals. I've spent a lot of time with this band of brothers known as the Falcons. And, there's lots of different ways to corroborate their information. There's intelligence files that the Iraqis have kept all these years. There are other intelligence officers, from other countries that you can use to fact check information. And, you know, I spent a lot of time traveling throughout Iraq, you know, going to the places where their operations took place in order to, you know, verify is the farmhouse where they caught a major suspect, terrorism suspect, is it actually there where they told me it was? You know, is it actually 50 miles away from this town or that town? And, you know, just like when you're building sources here in America, you realize that when your sources get the small things right, you can basically trust them with the large things as well. But being able to double check made this as a research project, a really time-consuming event. But there's information that I didn't put in because I wanted to keep my sources safe there. And there's information that I couldn't corroborate, which got left on the cutting room floor.
I wonder, too, the level of safety in Iraq. It just seems it's very volatile, as in one day it seems okay, the next day not so much. It seems there's always this constant threat of terrorism. So is that the same feel you get when you talk to the people that live there?
You know, one of the things that is so extraordinary about the Falcons is that they have managed to crack the nut of safety. You know, for all of the, our perceptions, I think for many Americans, and for definitely, you know, servicemen and women who were there in the mid and late 2000s, you know, it was a nightmare to be in Iraq. There were multiple terrorist attacks a day. You know, Baghdad was known as the capital of the world. People didn't know. Normal Iraqis didn't know whether they left their homes in the morning to go to work or send their kids off to school, whether they would come home alive that night. And so it was a terrifying place. And, you know, one of the things that got me started, on the nugget of this story that I originally wrote when I was working for the New York Times, and now that's become this book, when I went back to Baghdad in 2017, you know, there was a full-fledged war going on in the north part of the country. The Islamic State had taken over one-third of the territory of Iraq and controlled major cities and towns in Iraq. And so the armies, the Iraqi army and U.S. coalition forces, they were all trying to push the Islamic State back out of that land. But in Baghdad, in the capital, which is where 20% of the nation lives, it was peaceful. And there was like a renaissance going on. There were nightclubs that were open and families were out in the streets at night. Kids were eating ice cream and playing soccer. And it was like, wow, what is this? Like, who has been able to make the capital safe? And so that was the original question, journalistic question I had, that led me in this long roundabout that investigative journey to the doors of spy master Abu Ali al-Basri, when he told me about the reason why the country felt safe and had turned a corner. And that was largely because they managed to insert one of their officers as an undercover spy inside the Islamic State ranks. You know, he spent 17 months behind enemy lines posing as a fundamentalist Islamic jihadi, and by gaining the trust of the Islamic State, he was able to foil the attacks that were planned against the Capitol, and so saved thousands of lives and made life normal again for some Iraqis.
Wow. The Spy Master of Baghdad, a true story of bravery, family, and patriotism in the battle against ISIS, and Margaret Coker joining us here on Overnight America. A real fascinating story from someone on the ground talking and telling the stories of the people of Iraq during a very strange time in the history of its country, indeed. We'll continue with Margaret right after the break on KMOX.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL Draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app, the biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
Cardinals spring training is underway in Jupiter, Florida, and KMOX's Mike Claiborne is covering it all. Hear his daily reports, mornings and afternoons, and on Cardinals Open Line, sponsored in part by Norm's Bargain Bar and Wilkie Windows, on your voice of the St. Louis Cardinals, KMOX.
She worked as a journalist overseas in Baghdad and other areas. Margaret Coker wrote the book, The Spy Master of Baghdad, a true story of bravery, family, and patriotism in the battle against ISIS. We continue our conversation with her now. I'm also wondering, too, when you talk about family and everything that goes along with it, radicalization, it seems like sometimes some members of the family are more susceptible to that, may go that way, and you actually decide to tell the story of a female university student that got a lot of nationwide attention because of that. But you decide to tell some of these stories, and some of them may be looked at as, you know, why would you tell the story in the way that you tell it? And is that the intention? When someone reads the book, they get to a different perspective, or you just think it's important to document some of these?
Well, it's definitely important to document things because, you know, there's so far history about Iraq has been written by people from the outside. And you know, the Iraqis that I've gotten very close to and gained their trust, and that includes the heroes and the villains both, you know, they don't have a chance to tell their stories for good or for bad. And, you know, there's not black and white in Iraq. You know, there's, you know, it's a hard country to just oversimplify. Well, I guess it's easy to oversimplify, but the fact is that, you know, villains don't start off as villains normally, and heroes generally don't start off as heroes. And I wanted to, you know, bring those aspects of these characters across to readers as well. You know, and I tried to write a book whereby people who don't, you know, watch the Middle East or, you know, couldn't care less about Iraq. You know, these are just tales of underdogs doing amazing things, you know, and unlikely heroes and, you know, for the villains, sort of a cautionary tale about how someone who on paper seems to have, you know, all that life has to offer. The world was her oyster, this villain who turns into an ISIS bomb maker. And for lots of different reasons, her life soured and she became a radical. And I think that when, you know, we look at America right now and our law enforcement agencies are talking about domestic terror threats, and we look at our friends and our neighbors and, you know, this threat of extremism here, there might be some cautionary tales for Americans to see that, you know, people who should, you know, who look normal from the outside can fall prey to extremists, especially online.
You know, some Middle East countries now
getting together, signing pacts, accords to try to bring peace to that region, or at least some understanding. It seems to be that there is a common pointing of the finger to Iran that's going on right now. That's probably something you never thought you would see because of the history, and at least as long as I can remember, it's been very difficult to get any country in the Middle East on the same page about anything. But it seems to be there's some headways going on there. Do you see some encouragement that that region may be turning a corner?
Yeah, I mean, there's always people who are fighting for peace, and you know, generally their voices are drowned out by the violence and the instability there. You know, Iraq is a place that, you know, in the region, it, you know, and even in the West, we know it as a cradle of civilization. You know, there are Old Testament stories that take place in modern day Iraq. You know, the Iraqi people are a proud nation with a long history behind them, and they border Iran. So if we, there's a real, I think there's a real national security priority to make sure that Iraq stabilizes and develops. And there's so many Iraqis who feel like the U.S. is their natural partner. And, you know, together, U.S. and Iraq could definitely, you know, be a force for good in the region, especially when it comes to overall relationships with Iran.
So overall, when someone's interested in this type of book, The Spymaster of Baghdad, what are you hoping that people get out of it by the time they read your stories, the things that you've been able to document, your experiences over the past decade?
Well, I personally, I love Cold War spy novels, right? I like a good thriller, and I hope that people will read this book just like that, and then despite themselves, maybe learn a little bit about Iraq. But the fact is that even if these characters have names that might be hard to pronounce, and maybe, you know, readers, you know, never get to taste Iraqi food or go to Iraq, they'll be left with the these great tales of bravery. You know, again, I grew up in this military family, and I have a great appreciation for military history, especially, you know, from World War II and the Cold War. You know, we know the names of all of our allies back in those days, right? We know the names of individual French resistance fighters, and, you know, the kind of bravery that people, normal people had when they stood up to Nazis or stood up to the Soviets. And the war on terror isn't over. That, and maybe that's why we don't know the names of our partners in Iraq who have been fighting alongside with us in order to help keep their nation and our nation safe. And I hope that Spymaster, in some ways, you know, is a corrective to the histories that have already been written. And you know, people will remember that that Iraqis aren't bad guys. There's a lots of good guys there who, again, sort of suit up every day and try and make the nation a better place.
Do you actually write about the food of Iraq inside of your book?
You know, I talk about some of the meals, yes. I mean, I had the privilege to go, you know, to get to really be able to draw out these characters in depth. I spent a lot of time with their families, you know, in their living rooms, in their kitchens, watching their mothers and their wives cook. And yeah, it was a real honor, you know, that people trusted me with their stories. The really interesting thing about, you know, being a foreign correspondent, being an American in that nation is, you know, understanding that they're incredibly generous, they're incredibly hospitable, and they treated me like a sister, they treated me like a daughter, and I'll be ever grateful for that trust and that generosity they've shown me.
I would be curious too. You're right. It's great that they gave you that nice open door mentality. I wondered if being an American journalist, there'd be a certain prestige to it. Oh, it's an American. They got a certain feeling towards Americans, or if they would be more standoffish, a little reserved, you know, just, what are you doing here? What are you trying to, you know, a little bit trying to understand why you're coming and talking to them.
Yeah. Well, I think that, you know, for the spy master himself, his name is Abu Ali al-Basri. You know, he decided to trust me and had nothing to do with what passport, I was holding. But, you know, I'd like to say that there's some individual skill that I bring to the table. You know, I grew up in the South and, you know, I definitely have a, kill them with kindness kind of mentality when it comes to journalism. You know, treat people with respect. They have absolutely no obligation to talk to you. And when you show them that you're willing to listen, generally people will tell you some stories. And I like stories. I also, I have to say, you know, I definitely don't subscribe to the fact of being a stone cold observer when you're in someone's living room and they are mourning the death of a son and they start to cry. I mean, I'm sorry, I'm going to cry along with you because I see that human emotion and I connect with you on a very human level. Again, it doesn't matter at that point what your nationality is. You know, we can all feel sympathy and empathy for people in that situation. So those very basic human connections, I think, help as a journalist, no matter whether you're doing it in someone else's country or here in America. Journalists get a bad name and for reason. You know, you go storming into someone's front door and demand answers from them. You know, root strangers are not going to get very far very fast. Mm-hmm. And so I try to take another approach with my journalism.
Oh, that's good. So if people wanted to find your book or maybe learn a little bit more about you, what's a good place for them to look?
Well, I've got my author website is up online. This is my first book. So you can find more about me at margaretcoker.com or thespymasterofbaghdad.com. And my book's for sale across the U.S. in all bookstores, I think, Barnes & Noble, the big ones, and indie bookstores, too. I'm trying to get people to buy local and support local businesses. So if that's an option for you, please do that. I worked for so long at the Wall Street Journal as well as the New York Times, and you can find lots of my stories online and those newspaper archives as well.
The Spy Master of Baghdad. How special was that to get a box of books in the mail, your very first ones, to hold that and to smell it?
It was great. What a great feeling. I mean, look, the COVID, my life during COVID, thankfully, all my family were all safe and healthy. But the book was actually due out in stores last summer. So my COVID memories are more about the book delay. It's great to see it finally see the world and anxious to see what readers think about it.
Do you have any plans to travel back there in the future?
I would, as soon as this pandemic is over. We did manage to send books to Baghdad. So I talked to the spy master just last week, and he received his book. So we had an interesting, you know, warm reunion of sorts, as we all do, sort of socially distant. But yeah, I need to get back to Baghdad soon so I can sign those books for them.
Sign the book. How much does it cost to ship a book to Iraq, by the way?
It's not cheap, but that's okay. They have for all of the meals that they fed me and all the ways that they helped keep me safe during my journeys there. They deserve it and more.
How do you even send that? Is it the Postal Service? You have to do UPS? Is there a special thing I don't know about?
Yeah. UPS, FedEx. You got to go with the big boys.
Do they question you? They say, okay, why is this being shipped over to Iraq?
No, not at all. In fact, you know, there's this great Arab proverb, you know, again, as I said, you know, the cradle of civilization in ancient Babylon, you know, Iraqis have always been known in the Arab-speaking world as avid readers. And so, you know, even today, like through the worst of the bloodshed after 2003, and even today, there's an amazing booksellers market in downtown Baghdad, in ancient old Baghdad. And so you can walk for about 3/4 of a mile and have just hundreds of small booksellers there. And so it's something that Iraqis do on the weekend. They go and they browse, they buy books, they go to tea houses, they talk about literature. And so, no, sending books to Baghdad is one of the easier things to send to Iraq.
So I guess they don't get Amazon Prime there.
They don't. Not yet.
Not yet. Well, it's soon. Well, I wanted to know, too, you want to go back and you want to be able to visit this. What's the unfinished business, the things that if you were to do a follow-up to this or maybe add another chapter after the fact, just hypothetically, what's the unfinished business to the spy master of Baghdad that you're still trying to figure out?
Well, you know, the now because the Islamic State, I mean, it's basically, as you know, it's a terrorist organization. It's been decimated and almost certainly destroyed. I mean, there's still the threat of extremism, and you know, Islamic extremists will probably reemerge in another form. But with the actual Islamic State now destroyed, the Falcons, the characters in my story, you know, some of them have moved on to new specialties and new jobs, And so, you know, there's lots of other domestic terror threats that Iraq is facing right now. And one of those is organized crime. Mm. And one of my characters, the younger brother of the book, Munaf al-Qudani, has become an expert in fighting organized crime in Baghdad. So it would be, if we can sell the film rights to Spy Master, the sequel would be the organized crime unit that he now heads up.
Yeah, so what happens after you're a member of the Falcons? You kind of stay in the like a similar business? Because when I think about the veterans that have served back in, you know, after 9/11, I had some friends that served and they come back and, you know, some become cops, some become plumbers. So what does normal life look like after you're done fighting ISIS if you're someone that lives in Iraq?
Yeah, I think there's basically, you know, that holds true there. I mean, some people, you know, signed up to defend the country in 2014 when the Islamic State was such a threat. And they signed up for very, you know, a limited duration. And they went back to their normal lives, you know, running their family shops or plumbers, as you said. And, you know, the Falcons are in it for life. You know, and lots of them, you know, there's so much intelligence work to be done. You can turn your skills, though, on more domestic concerns rather than international terrorism. It's it's a vibrant business, keeping the nation safe over there.
The Spy Master of Baghdad, a true story of bravery, family, and patriotism in the battle against ISIS. Margaret Coker, again, if people wanted to look up your book online, where can they look?
Well, go to my author site, margaretcoker.com, or thespymasterofbaghdad.com. You can learn more about me. You can learn more about the characters, and you can find places to shop for the book. But basically, I think you can find it in most of the major bookstores, from Barnes & Noble to Target, and also your indie bookstores locally where you live.
Yeah, we have some fantastic bookstores here in St. Louis. The Spy Master of Baghdad and Margaret Coker. Thank you so much for spending time with us tonight on KMOX.
Well, I appreciate the time. I hope people like the book.
And she joins us on the Bomarito Automotive Group guest line. This is Overnight America, KMOX.
Now back to Overnight America on KMOX. Sponsored by Michaels Flooring, the flooring experts. MichaelsFlooringOutlet.com.
Well, I can't believe that the show is about over. We have a couple of replay hours coming up that I think you'll enjoy. We'll talk about Governor Andrew Cuomo making an anatomy joke. Now, probably not the best thing to do after you're being accused of sexual harassment. Kissing a girl on the lips, unwelcome, saying that you want to play strip poker with her, an aide to you. Ugh, icky, icky, icky. Probably the dumbest thing you could have done is say something like what he said during a press conference today, which you'll hear right after the break in the replay hours. We'll also talk to David Morgan, author of The Silver Manifesto, about precious metals in the Federal Reserve. And later in the show, too, Senator Rand Paul, some of the questioning he had on Capitol Hill had him trending on social media. But it's a very valid question, and it's one that I think we'll have some time to discuss in the replay hour or maybe later in the future at some point. You know, we keep watching what's going down in Capitol Hill. It looks like they may be taking the minimum wage out of the coronavirus spending bill, but there's still an opportunity for it to go back in there. Some opposition in the Democratic Party saying to themselves, well, this doesn't actually fight COVID. I don't know where they decided that was where the moment they're going to draw the line, but there's a million other things you could take out of that bill that have nothing to do with fighting COVID that they could decide to take out. So maybe we'll get some of that later this weekend too. CPAC is happening, and Donald Trump is going to be speaking at CPAC. That's a pretty big deal. I'm sure we'll have some stuff to talk about on Sunday with it. Kevin Glayn, another great whole nother story.
I was lying on the couch watching World War II in color.
When a political fanatic hijacked a civilized nation.
It was very relaxing.
The world is taken by surprise.
When my wife came in and said, hey, you need to get after those mice, the ones leaving the droppings in the spice drawer. But wait a minute, honey.
The wave of Nazi bombers.
No, you have to realize, she said, mice can have babies every 2 weeks. We'll be taken over.
In just 2 hours, the Japanese cripple the American Pacific.
So I went to the hardware store and down to the rodent section where there was armaments arrayed on the shelf to do away with mice. It made me feel sorry for them, really.
The two of us need.
They're just little guys with black beady eyes, And what's waiting to get them are the mouse traps, the glue traps, the poison pellets, and more. I got 8 of the mouse traps and 2 poison mice hotels for the journey of no return. I came home from the hardware store and showed it all to my wife, the same way I'd show her candy or flowers on Valentine's Day. She seemed mildly impressed, like a teacher whose student was turning in a paper 3 weeks late. I put some peanut butter on the mouse traps and hid them all over, in the kitchen, in the bathroom, downstairs, upstairs, and I put 2 poison motels out. Wait till they check into those. Now it was time to get back to my show, World War II in color. We'll win. There was a decisive naval battle in the Pacific Midway, and then the landing on the beaches of Normandy. The direction of the war was changing. Hitler loses the Battle of Stalingrad. This allows Russian troops to start moving west toward Germany, just as the Americans, British, and Canadians are moving east. I haven't finished the series yet. I still have some time to go. We've killed 3 mice, though. 2 by trap, and 1 by the poison motel. The poison one wandered out of the motel, and he was mincing around the kitchen in small sidesteps like a dancer when he finally keeled over, and we gave him a burial at sea. There will be other battles as the Allies press toward Berlin, but the outcome of the war at this point, it's inevitable. With a whole nother story, I'm Kevin Killeen.
Oh, Kevin is so good. Why would you flush a mouse? That doesn't make a lick of sense. I'd have to ask him that. Why would you do that? There's no way that would go down. That's just going to sit there. Oh, okay, you got some problems. A plunger, I guess, will push it through. All right, enjoy the rest of your weekend. We'll be back again on Sunday night. If you want to reach out to me between now and then, I'm on social media, but look me up on Facebook, Ryan Recker Radio. Have a great night. Bye.
My heart beats with the lonely rain, wishing I could see your face again. Change the dial on the radio, find something playing kind of bluesy and slow. If things were only like they used to be, we'd be lying in love tonight. I wish you'd call me on.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL Draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app, the biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.